Thanks for listening to the Best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to The Best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
A story came out today in Sports Illustrated. Good story on Griff.
It was a good story.
Good story. And
Griff, you know what? He was very candid. He was very candid.
That's Griff. He's a candid guy. He's an honest guy. He's a straight shooter, which I like about him. But I disagree with his sentiment in some of the things he said. Rob G, read a few of the things that Griff said.
Here you go, Chris.
Rob G, are you reading out of the Bible? I just want to make sure because so much of it rang true. So let's hear it.
All right. Here's the first quote. Now, I want to make sure it's not taken out of context either. Like, you know he's going to say that it was.
I read the whole story.
So this is the sentence leading up to the quote. The pressures of annually supplementing LeBron James with a contending roster mounted endlessly. Here's Griff. Quote, everything we did was so inorganic and unsustainable and frankly not fun. I was miserable. Literally, the moment we won the championship, I knew I was going to leave. There was no way I was going to stay for any amount of money.
Wow.
End quote.
Here's the deal, Rob Parker. You're in sports to win. It's different than a lot of other fields. Every field, of course, you want success. You want to do a good job. But sports is different in that it's all about winning for who? The fans, the players and the fans. That's it. This is not about how happy you are at your job. And frankly, a lot of people aren't happy at their job. There are a lot of people, most people have jobs where they're not that happy.
Is this a personal take from you?
No.
Okay.
They're just doing it to collect the paycheck. And they got to provide for their family. They're upstanding people. And they know they got to do what they got to do. And so I really don't want to hear that the pressure to win was so, I was miserable. I get, again, he's being honest, which I get. But in sports, this is not about you having fun playing fantasy basketball. Griff, it seems like he's suggesting, and if you read the whole article, it kind of comes that way as well, that he would have been happier maybe had LeBron James not gone there and he builds around Kyrie Irving and the journey to try to make the playoffs, the journey to try to win the conference title, the journey to try to win the NBA championship would have been a lot more fun. It would have been organic and all that. But guess what? You probably, I'll say certainly, would not have won a championship. Your team may have stayed horrible. You may have gotten fired. And chances are you wouldn't be the celebrated general manager you are today and gotten the shot you got with the New Orleans Pelicans. So I get it. It's pressure with LeBron James. It's pressure when you got to win a championship or bust. But that is what sports is about. And if Griff does a good job in New Orleans, looks good so far. Let's see. I have no idea. Let's see what these ex-Lakers and Zion Williamson become and see how they build this team. But if he does a good job in New Orleans, that same pressure, maybe not to the extent because there's no LeBron James unless Zion becomes that great, but that same pressure will be heaped on you again. You get a little honeymoon period of a few years, but eventually you better win. So that's my point. Like, be thankful. The fact that LeBron James fell in Griff's lap. And Griff will admit he had nothing to do with LeBron going there. Nothing. He got lucky. The fact that LeBron James fell in his lap led him to four straight finals appearances, or three, I think Griff was there for, is a blessing to Griff. And you gotta be thankful and appreciative for that blessing.
You done?
I think it was a mic drop. I'm not surprised that there's was silence no, that was, on the other end.
No, there was
other,
no the there was mic. No mic drop. It was just predictable.
I'm not
it
surprised was just, there's no
it was predictable because
on
the
your part.
Because the part that you always leave out is, yes, I get the championship, but that doesn't mean the process and what you went through was great. And Chris, here's the part. I think he was spot on in that because of, this is why LeBron left Cleveland the first time. He was so afraid that he wasn't going to win. He didn't believe in himself, so he had to run and flee to Miami and put together a team. This is the pressure that goes around to everybody else and why guys don't want to play with LeBron. Because it is all about LeBron. And Rob G, the quote that he said about the blame, you got that? I thought that quote is
right
on the money. Can you read that?
This is what Griff said. He said, the reason is, a lot of people don't like playing around LeBron, is LeBron's getting all the credit, none of the blame, and that's not fun for people. They don't like being part of that world.
No doubt about it, and that is a part of LeBron's world. That's why Kevin Durant called it a toxic environment with everything that's going on, and this is the other one. Chris, you can rip Griff all you want and say he should be thankful and this and that, but we heard Andre Iguodala mouth the same exact thing, that it wasn't fun expecting to win all the time in Golden State. Can you have that quote, Rob G? Can you read it?
I do.
Please read it.
So should we not try
to
win anymore?
Just hear this out. That's not what I'm saying. Iguodala is a player who's had nothing but success on a great team, and even he said that it can become a daunting task and not be fun. This is a player, so go ahead, read it.
This is what Iguodala said to our friend Rick Bucher on Bleacher Report. He said, quote, playing for the Warriors is just like playing for Team USA. When you play in the Olympics, you don't even enjoy it. There's the anxiety of, we have to win, we can't lose, we can't go back home. We talk about it on the Olympic team. We can't go back home without the gold medal, fellas. Got to lock in. Let's lock in. And then when you win, it's like, well, yeah, we got it. We came back home. We won. But, you know, we were supposed to. End quote.
So all I'm saying is,
Rob Parker would rather be Butler than Duke.
That's not what I'm saying, Chris. You're trying to twist my words. That's not what I'm saying.
Can you just have your spiel?
Can I talk about it? I mean, you just had yours. You said you had your mic drop. All I'm telling you is, I thought Griff was being honest that it's not always fun to be around LeBron and this whole idea that we got to rip up everything, trade 8 players at the midway point, do whatever for LeBron because LeBron has to win. And there is a process sometimes that goes on where if you can look at Toronto and the process that they went through and they won a championship.
What process?
They traded
for Kawhi
Leonard. But they gave
that
up a star.
It.
No.
It wasn't organic? Yes, it was.
It was organic. They made a trade. They gave up their star for Kawhi, who was a guy who wasn't happy in San Antonio. They made other moves. It wasn't a star-driven, let's team up 3 or 4 guys, and we got to get this guy.
Neither was Cleveland.
I'm talking about in general, and I thought that his quotes were spot on and right, and the reason why LeBron's had problems getting other guys to come join him. They don't want to be when you're LeBron James and all your fans are calling you the GOAT, if you don't win, the other guys are the scapegoat. And that's the problem. It's never LeBron's fault. When has it been LeBron's fault?
Right,
you say it all the time, Chris.
It was his fault against Dallas.
He played 11 years in Cleveland and they won one championship.
It was his fault against Dallas. He got crushed for Dallas. Dwayne Wade didn't get crushed for Dallas. Chris Bosh didn't get crushed for Dallas. Mike Miller, if he was even there at that time, didn't get crushed for Dallas.
I don't even know. Was he there?
I don't know. He was there at some point. LeBron got crushed for that. Look, that comes with greatness, Rob. That's what I'm saying. You know, you were covering the NBA at this time with Michael Jordan. How did he and Jerry Krause get along? Jerry Krause was the general manager. Did they get along well? And Krause was upset. Krause was glad when Jordan left, when Phil Jackson retired, because he wanted to show he could build his own team.
No, I think ownership was happy because they didn't want to pay those guys anymore.
Krause wanted to show some stuff too, though. And how's that worked out? How the Bulls been since Jordan left?
Yeah, but that's irrelevant of whether or not it's cool, the process as you go through,
no,
and whether you enjoy
Krause
it.
Didn't enjoy a lot of it.
Whether you enjoy it, and I'm just saying, I'm not surprised by David. David Griffin could have kept his mouth shut, accepted the championship.
No, he would just be. I think he's honest.
I don't think he's ripping LeBron. I think he's being honest with how he felt during that time. This all makes sense to me. It just does.
And you're saying again, as you always do, this is why players don't want to play with LeBron. Anthony Davis changed his whole public image.
Anthony Davis is with the same agency as LeBron.
Yeah, but he chose that agency. No, he didn't wake up and all of a sudden, oh my gosh,
if he was with another agency and he with another agent and he picked LeBron, Chris, I'd back off that story.
He had another agent.
He fired the agent to go with LeBron. That whole thing is about LeBron. The whole thing was about LeBron.
Okay, why did Anthony Davis sign with Rich Paul?
I'm just telling you. I'm not buying it. Was he forced at gunpoint?
I mean, seriously, you act like he just out of the blue. He woke. Oh my gosh, Rich Paul, my agent. I guess I gotta go play with LeBron.
I talked to Rich Paul,
knowing full and well that would get him to play with LeBron.
I talked to some of his teammates. Who played with him, who said they don't even recognize Anthony Davis.
That's fine, but he's not the same guy he was.
Be the case. That's all I'm saying.
I'm not saying that's not the case, but I'm saying you can't tell me nobody wants to play with LeBron when Anthony Davis is gone to play
Kawhi
with him.
Kawhi had a layup to go.
When Richard Jefferson, Kyle Korver, guys have taken less money to go play with him. Let's just keep it real. That's all the brother's saying.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are pleased to bring in the NFL Network reporter, does a terrific job covering the league, Jane Slater. Jane, welcome to
The Odd
Couple.
What's happening?
Thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate it.
No, it's great to have you. Now, you've been all over this Ezekiel Elliott story and situation. How do you foresee this ending? I think if I were Jerry and the way I see, you know, things seeming to go from his comments, Stephen Jones' comments, is I could see them letting this go into the early part of the season and seeing how they do in the first couple games or game maybe without Zeke. Can you see it going that far?
Speculating at this point I think would be inappropriate in the role that I have as a reporter, but I can at least give you this. I don't know if the Cowboys even have an idea of how long this thing's going to go. And I say that because from the beginning of this, this was so unexpected. It's my understanding that Zeke told him that he was going to be there at training camp. And so that's where some of the rub's coming in here. And, you know, the Cowboys picked up his fifth-year option, and they keep reminding us that Ezekiel Elliott is, in fact, under contract. Not only do they have the fifth-year option, they have the ability to franchise tag him. And if he doesn't show up on August 6th, well, he pushes free agency down a year, and then he becomes a restricted free agent. So as much as people have talked about all of Ezekiel Elliott's leverage, and he certainly has that in these discussions when you look at his production and what he's been able to accomplish in his 3 years with Dallas and who he is as a back in this league, the Cowboys, in a sense, also have a lot of leverage. So I think these two sides are butting heads a little bit here on the Cowboys feel like they've submitted a fair offer. They want him to be paid. They believe he deserves to be paid. But as it was told to me this week, they thought the Todd Gurley deal was a bad deal. They're trying to reset the market. And I would imagine that Ezekiel Elliott's team is trying to start those discussions at Todd Gurley money. When I was asked, is this an issue over guaranteed money? Is this an issue over length of the contract? I was told everything has been an issue, that they are not close. An offer came down yesterday, and it was one that the Cowboys weren't interested in entertaining. So to be able to say, I think he's going to be here on the August 6th deadline, I think he's going to be here to start training camp, it's anybody's guess. Everyone I've asked in that building doesn't seem to have a good handle / sense on when he's going to report to camp. And so the next place I go is how much is in Ezekiel Elliott's bank? Can he afford to miss game checks? And that's an answer that I don't have.
Hey, Jane, was Todd Gurley's contract a bad one when he rushed for over 100 yards and ran over the Cowboys and en route to the Super Bowl? Was that a bad contract then?
Look, it's not so much an issue of is this guy talented and deserves the money. It's, you know, all of these guys, the analytics guys, will tell you that it's a position you don't overpay. And the Cowboys right now find themselves in a predicament in the sense that they're probably going to have to overpay their quarterback just by nature of the fact that Carson Wentz set the market. And he's been playing for, what, $327,000, I think was the average the last 3 years. He started every single game as a Cowboys player, the first time that that's ever happened in franchise history. And they've seen improvement from it. But not only that, it's the leadership, the coachability, the way he galvanized the locker room and the way Dak Prescott's there at camp. They're not constantly managing the distractions that Ezekiel Elliott has put forth for them. I mean, keep in mind, it was just, what, a month ago that Jerry Jones' legal team, his legal envoy, was up there with Ezekiel Elliott as he's meeting with the commissioner for yet another off-the-field issue.
Right. Hey, Jane, here's my other thing about that. I'm glad you brought that up. That's just where I'm going. You can't have it both ways. Jerry Jones has dabbled into signing a lot of questionable guys. Greg Hardy. He also tried to coup against Goodell over, right, Ezekiel Elliott, and now he wants to use that against him. How can you use that against him when he's harbored a lot of guys who have made a lot of mistakes off the field because they can play? Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying, and it's a valid argument. The Cowboys absolutely know what they're getting into with these guys. I mean, look at Randy Gregory, a guy that they continue
yes.
to support and go to bat for. But Randy Gregory is not sitting there holding them hostage ahead of training camp. And it was Jerry Jones, who was feted at the Hall of Fame 2 years ago, who publicly went on the record and defended a guy in very muddy allegations that pertains to domestic abuse. And there were a lot of people that raised some eyebrows. Jerry Jones lost some respect in the league as a result of that. And if you watch that All or Nothing special, I brought this up the other day, one of the singular moments that stood out for me was when Jerry Jones came over and sat right next to Ezekiel. It wasn't the boss talking to you from across the desk. He sat right next to Ezekiel Elliott. He tapped him on the leg and he said, "I went to bat for you." And I think by telling the Cowboys that you were going to be here, they were working on trying to get that deal. They've handled all these instructions. Oh, and by the way, the Cowboys are now involved in a lawsuit that involves a car crash to the tune of $20 million. The sense that I'm getting is there is just a level of frustration and headache. And again, they knew what they were getting into, absolutely. I don't think that they're sitting here saying, you know, Zeke, we deserve a hometown discount because of that. But it's also, we can talk about your contract next year, 2 years. We're talking about it now. We're trying to get you here. And what you're putting on the table isn't anywhere close to what we're willing to talk about. And that's where this situation is currently.
The iCup, we're joined by Jane Slater of the NFL Network. Jane, can you give us some clarity? We keep hearing this August 6th deadline. If he doesn't show up, what if he shows up August 10th and says, "I'll play on the deal I have," or week one? You know, last year with Le'Veon Bell, he had the week 10 where he could show up. So,
and then there was a loophole.
Can you give us, yeah, that was the loophole. Can you give us kind of, if he doesn't show up of August 6th and he shows up a week later, he still doesn't get, how does this work?
1 second here. I'd love to give you an answer on that, but I haven't been able to get real clarity on that either, just to be completely frank and
truthful. No, that's something,
you guys,
yep.
Right, we keep hearing his date, right?
Right. The best way that's been described to me is it just pushes his free agency back a year. But in terms of a 10th deadline, how it affected Le'Veon Bell, I simply don't know. I even posed the question, all right, if he shows up on August 6th, he works out with you, and then a week before the season, he decides to peace out, what happens then? I haven't been able to get a clear answer on that either. So when I get it, I'll get back to you guys, but I'm as perplexed as you are, and quite frankly, some people inside the building that I've asked are equally perplexed.
Jane, last thing, and the Cowboys have their own issues. I guess they never thought they'd be in this position, you know, where they got to pay three guys, and it just looks like some they're going to have to make a choice, because if they give Dak Prescott $30 million, they probably won't have enough for Amari Cooper, and depending on what happens, all three of these guys can't get paid, can they?
I've been told by the capologist that you can absolutely get these three guys paid. I mean, you can always get you can always get creative with guaranteed money, et cetera, right? But to your point, I mean, if you've got a guy that's expecting the world and they're not prepared to pay that, I don't know how that's going to work. I haven't got any sense this Dak deal's not going to get done. I was told that they're optimistic this happens in training camp. Amari Cooper is still kind of the wild card to me. His team hasn't done a whole lot of talking, period. There haven't been a lot of leaks from his camp, and all the Cowboys have said is that we've submitted an offer that we feel good about. I truly believe that they were waiting to see sort of where the Michael Thomas numbers were, but I haven't heard about any new developments as that moves forward. I think Amari Cooper believes in himself, is betting on himself. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't get the numbers that he wants. He says, okay, cool, let's table this, and let's talk about this down the line. But that's sort of where we're at on these three contracts. I mean, the Cowboys have sort of said to us and sort of managed the media in the sense, we're not going to give you guys daily updates or numbers about where we're at on these contracts. So they've been playing a little vague on all three of them, to be quite honest.
Jane, great stuff, great information. Thanks a lot. Keep up the great work.
Yes, thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Yep, and make sure you tune in to NFL Network's Inside Training Camp Live. That continues through August 7th, starting each day at 10 a.m. Eastern Time.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker, weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Great person to bring in after Rob and I just got into it about this NFL stuff going on with the running backs and their salaries. It's Ephraim Salaam, former NFL offensive lineman and Fox Sports Radio weekend host. Ephraim, what's happening, man?
What's happening?
What's up? Hey, man, y'all got to cut it out, man. Y'all keep going back and forth, man.
Well, hey, that's what we do. That's what the Odd Couple does.
That's why we're the Odd Couple, exactly.
We're going to bring you into this. Now, Ephraim, we have Rob and I both always criticize the players, this collective bargaining agreement for the NFL players. But we have talked with former NFL players, our colleague Marcellus Wiley, who defends the agreement.
Well, he was a part of it.
Right. I don't know how active you were in the committees and all that when you were a player, but what is your view of the collective bargaining agreement that the players have in the NFL?
How they approach players, especially when they're playing, is they come in, the union reps come in, tell you what's going on, and the only thing the majority of players care about is if you get your dues check at the end of it, right? So for those who don't know, when the league comes around and the PA, the NFLPA comes around to every team every year during the season, it's usually after practice, Wednesday, Thursday, after practice. They come in, they have a whole big thing, a whole big speech set up and what's going on with negotiation, what you should and shouldn't have. And then, in my experience, they would say something like, hey, you want health care forever? Do you want higher salaries? Of course, current players are going to say higher salaries, stuff like that. And then they say, okay, well, you're going to listen to that. And the first question is, when do we get the checks? Like, when do we get our dues check? That's $10,000. It's probably more now. But it was like $10,000, right? You get your $10,000 and you move on. So guys not even really paying attention. They just want to get home. They want to get that check, get home. Maybe you tell your significant other about it or not, or maybe that's your Vegas freak off money.
Right.
Who knows?
Right.
But the way the information is given to us is skewed. So you're not really paying attention to it. So they're just like, whatever the NFLPA wants you to do, they'll accentuate that point and then be like, yeah, and it's the best for all of us. You'll be like, all right, fine, cool, boom, let's go. Where the money at?
Wow. How about the running backs in a situation where, I mean, we saw it with Le'Veon last year, and now we're looking at Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon, and basically they want these guys to be workhorses and they have the control of those guys for the first 5 years, and then after they do all that, they go, well, we can't pay you. You don't even get 4 yards a carry. You're kind of overworked. You're kind of broken down. So it's a situation where it might be unfair for running backs because of the way they're used. You know what I mean? And then where other players have longer shelf lives than running backs. You see it that way?
the premium for running backs is definitely not the same as it used to be. I think Adrian Peterson was really the last big, huge contract for a running back because it became a two-back league.
Right.
It became you, like, guys aren't doing it by themselves anymore. That when I was Jamal Anderson was a one-back guy, right? Terrell Davis, they're one-back guys. Sean Alexander, one. That was an era where you had one of the top running backs in the game, you were doing it. And you were going to give them 300, 400, you know, carries a year. That's just what it was. Then it became, okay, we're going to do Thunder and Lightning with Warwick Dunn and DJ Duckett, I think it was.
Yep.
And then, you had all of these teams going to these secondary backs, but now you have a resurgence of guys who can carry that load. Le'Veon Bell, you have Ezekiel Elliott. You have I'm not sold on Gordon. Like, that's just not.
Right. I agree with you. I like him, but I wouldn't break the bank for him.
Yeah, he's only had 1,000-yard season. It was only, 1,140 yards or something like that at 3.9 yards a carry. Last year he had 8. He only played 12. He hasn't done enough to break the bank.
Right.
The Chargers, he's been so hurt, the Chargers have been forced to do without him. So they're
and they've done well without him.
But
it's funny.
We're used to playing. That's exactly right.
But Ephraim, the only thing I'll say is, for all the stuff you just said, and basically dog Melvin Gordon, it's funny. He asked for a hold. He has a holdout, and they double his contract. They're willing to double his contract. So obviously, there's some other money. How did they go from $5 million to say, we'll give you $10 million? Because obviously, he's not being paid what he's worth. Wouldn't you agree with that? Well,
I mean, the money is there, but you got to prove yourself, right? You really, as a running back, you want to hold out? You've had 1,000-yard season? Think about that.
He's had one season where he averaged four or more yards a carry. One out of four.
Come on, man. We can't do that. Like, what are we doing? Whoever's advising him, they're missing the point.
It's the Odd Couple. We're joined by Ephraim Salon. Ephraim, let me ask you this. Former NFL offensive lineman, you haven't been a lineman. I mean, you guys get the least amount of credit, the least amount of publicity, and oftentimes outside of left tackle, the least amount of money. Do you guys look at it differently? How do they linemen look at running backs complaining about the money and stuff?
It's funny to us. And the thing that never had happened before until last season, when some of the linemen came out and spoke out against Le'Veon Bell, like, that was crazy to me.
That is crazy to talk about man's money, man.
That was crazy.
That's the worst thing I've ever seen. Yep.
Yeah, the linemen coming out talking about, you make this much and I make this much. Like, if that's the direction the league going in, then I'm glad I'm out, because I would have went crazy in that locker room.
Right?
Like, you can't do that. That has nothing to do with you. As an offensive lineman, we do our job. We are the epitome of do your job.
And
it's not going to be no fanfare. It's no autograph signings. It's yeoman's work. You do your job, and the more you do it, the better you do it. You'll make some money, but the team benefits greatly from you doing your job. Those five guys up front, that's what it is. There's no billboards with five offensive linemen on it. Where do they do that at?
Right. Are running backs going to have to eventually take that mentality?
No, because they're pounding, right? What you got to do is look with Seattle. They got about 12 running backs up there. I don't know how many running backs they got in camp. But what it created was a sense of competition. Guys are hungry for the ball. Their first-round draft pick last year barely got some touches. When he got healthy, he's a dynamic running back. But we didn't know it because he barely got touches. Rashad Penny. You know what I mean? So what's happening is you can find running backs. You can find running backs. Denver proved that years ago, right? Terrell Davis wasn't a first-round draft pick. None of those guys.
Yeah, Mike, but they could never win until they finally got a guy who could run like that. And Seattle
is – Yeah, but when did they find the guy? Where did they find him?
Yeah, right. No, I'm not saying –
In the fifth round.
Yeah, I get that. A lot of great players are in the first round. I mean, we've seen Tom Brady, Joe Montana, a lot of guys undrafted. But I was saying Seattle's a perfect example about they cost themselves a Super Bowl by not giving the ball to the running back. They had one right there.
Yeah, they did. Once you have them, right, you realize, once you don't have them, you realize how much you need one. Right? That's the old crux. But when you have them and you work them, it's like, how much more years? How many more years? How much tread he has left on the tire? It's that'll always be an argument. Those days of paying running backs, MVP, league running backs aren't league MVPs anymore.
So
remember that they were seriously considered for all quarterbacks.
No, those days are over. No doubt about it.
We got 30 seconds left. Quickly, what would you do if you were Jerry Jones in this situation?
You gotta pay. First of all, you got to pay a quarterback. You got to pay Dak Prescott. I get what he wants to do. I can't trust Ezekiel Elliott off the field.
Yeah, but he's made a history of signing players like that. He's the one. He's the one who put up a coup against Roger Goodell over Ezekiel.
He's not in charge anymore like that. His son ain't going for that. He's like, yo, man, you got to step back. Like, we're not doing that. We can't do that. We can't afford to do that. Right, you lose Ezekiel Elliott. He just got in trouble again. When does it stop?
Right.
I don't know. Seriously. They could always go out and re-sign Greg Hardy again. Right. I mean, come on, Ephraim. Don't you can't use that argument because the Dallas Cowboys
more than
but they used to do. They've signed nothing.
That doesn't mean you can't turn over a new leaf.
Used to. You keep saying they used to. Yeah. They used to do that. Right? All it's right. Not happening anymore. You can't dedicate that type of money to somebody you can't trust.
Ephraim, great stuff, man. Great insight. We appreciate it, brother. And we'll be listening to you on the weekend.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you.
All right, thanks.